CliffCentral.com. So here he is, ladies and gentlemen. I'm very, very pleased to have this morning in the studio with us someone who I've wanted to talk to for about 3 weeks since I saw the clip. Pastor Evan Mawarire. How are you, sir?
I'm very, very well. Gareth, thank you so much for having me on your show today.
Thank you. I believe you have to leave at 9. I was under the impression that we'd have a little bit of time, and then I saw Loiso's arrived to do his show. I wasn't sure whether he was going to do that, but I really did want to talk to you. There's so much to cover here. Zimbabwe at the moment, there's a lot of activity.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago, there was strike action. There was sort of the kind of discussion and even uprising that we haven't seen for a very long time or ever in Zim. Mm. And it all began with not just you, but mostly because of you saying how you felt about your flag.
Mm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You're wearing the flag around your neck this morning. Mm. Are you sorry you did it? Because it's led to all kinds of personal difficulties, but it's also led Zimbabwe down a path which you can't really turn around from.
You know, I think for me to say I'm sorry I did it, I think would be a betrayal to my own conscience and my own integrity. I meant it. And when I did it, it didn't begin as, trying to stir up some national uprising. It was my personal, honest opinion and frustration with where I was, with my own life, and the desire that I have for my own country as one Zimbabwean, as a patriotic Zimbabwean. And I think part of it was this, Gareth, is that I just got tired of carrying around a Zimbabwe that I really want in my heart and hiding it and being afraid to talk about the Zimbabwe that I want to see. You know, every day, you know, and I know many Zimbabweans are like this. We get back home and we have this Zimbabwe that we really want, but we're afraid to show it. So when we get into a hiding place or when we're alone, we kind of take it out and we have a sneak peek. We look at it for about 20 seconds or 30 minutes and we dream for that 30 seconds and we love it. We enjoy it. And then we shut it up and close it. And we say, first of all, it's impossible. And secondly, don't even talk about it because it's scary. And let's just get back to, you know, facing the hardships that we have. And I got tired of that. And I thought, no, let me just say how I feel about and what I'd like to see. And it took off because a lot of people said, hey, I feel the same way, and suddenly joined their voices to it, and it's become what it's become today.
If you haven't seen the video, it's just an impassioned plea. You're not pleading with anyone in particular. Mm. You're saying how you feel, but I think it's something that resonated with a lot of people. You can hear how emotional you are. You go through the colors on the flag. You go through what the flag means to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people would feel that this message pulls at their hearts, even if they're not Zimbabwean.
Mm.
I think all of us has at some time felt like we needed to belong somewhere, like we needed to see our hopes and dreams realized in a place that we care about. And I don't know whether you had any idea when you put that up of what kind of reaction it would draw from people, but it must have crossed your mind that this could be something that would have ramifications and repercussions.
It did cross my mind, and I tell you, you know, I'll give you the reason or the evidence why, is that when I did the video, it was spur of the moment. I was actually leaving, you know, my office about to go home, and I was so dejected because I'd failed to do things that a normal father is supposed to be able to do for his children. And so I looked at the flag, a small flag that sits on my desk. And that's when I began to go through the colors of the flag and saying, this is what it means, but this is where we are as a nation. However, I wish it meant this. And I had the video on my phone for about 5-6 hours before I posted it, because I watched it after I recorded about 2 or 3 times. I thought to myself, my gosh, I don't know who is going to watch this and what they will, you know, what they will say in terms of, you know, from a government perspective. But I'm not at least at that time, I was not an influential figure. Our church, His Generation Church, has a membership of about 50. Every given Sunday, we're about 50 people in church. And that's not big.
You're really just a small, like, community pastor.
That's exactly it. So
you've never been an activist.
You've never
been out on the streets protesting.
Never, ever. And when I got home, I didn't show my wife this video. I just kept quiet. I posted the video at about 11 p.m. That's when I posted the video. eventually I thought, you know, let me just post it because this is exactly how I feel. And of course, the next morning, I think we woke up and there were some 30,000 views. And that's when I realized, what is going on here? And by the end of the day, I think it had 90,000, and then.
But as those numbers, crazy. As those numbers crept up and up, so must your anxiety have crept up and up, because you know, it's not like South Africa where people are not only bullshy and bold and want to complain and say insulting things about our government and the president, and, you know, we can get away with it here to a degree. Zimbabwean politics is not like this.
No, it's not. You've got to be careful where you step. Because it's easy to get ensnared, or it's easy to have the system focus on you quite and quite quickly and very quickly. And that's how I found out, you know, about that when I was, taken in by the police.
Right.
And I thought it was routine questioning. Then it became an arrest. And
so
you've
been subject to this routine questioning before?
No.
Oh.
Not at all. I mean, when I say routine, I was looking at the protesters that had been taken in before me a couple of days before. They'd been, you know, arrested, questioned, and then arrested, charged with public violence. They go to court, then they're given bail, you know, and it carries on. And for me, I thought this is how it's going to play out. But it became very different. And so this has been the wake up call for me, because, you know, as of course you would now know that the story that when we got to court, it took ages for me to eventually appear before the magistrate. I then appeared before the magistrate about 5 or 6 PM. I can't remember the time. And when I did, the shock for me was when my lawyer said to me, listen, young man, this has changed. And I said to him, what do you mean this has changed? It's routine. I'm charged with inciting public violence, which I deny. And he says, no. And he showed me the charge sheet, and it read that I was being charged with subverting a constitutionally elected government. I looked at him and I said, first and foremost, tell me what that means. And he says to me, this is very much treason. I remember I said to him, are you kidding me? How did we get
treason's a capital crime. That's the worst thing you could be charged with.
Gareth, this lawyer, he looked at me. My lawyer has been very calm, and he's a great guy. But for the first time, he looked at me straight in the eye, and I was standing in the dock, right in the, because he asked the magistrate, he says, can I please have 1 minute with my client before we proceed? And he looked at me in the eye, and he says to me, Pastor E, this has become very serious. And I said to him, how serious is it? And he says, you could go away for a very long time. I need your permission. Should we ask the magistrate to put this down and we deal with it tomorrow, or should we go for it right now? And I said to him, Harrison, we need to do this right now. I remember I looked across from where I was and I saw my wife who was sitting there. She's pregnant. And what went through my mind was, what have I done to my family? What have I done? This is not what I intended. And I couldn't. It was the most... It broke me completely. But something interesting happened whilst I sat in the back, and the magistrate asked us to come back and forth, because I think we took 2 or 3 breaks. And as I sat in the back, there's a very they have a staircase just right. It's one wall between myself and the courthouse where they would hold me each time there's a break. And I sat there. It was dark and it smells of urine, and it was very, very cold. And I sat on the concrete stairs waiting to be called back in. And the magistrate was not yet back, and the courthouse exploded into song. Now, I thought there were people outside. Now, this has never happened before in Zimbabwe, because first and foremost, you don't misbehave in a court of law. It's contempt. These people began to sing, and they sang a song that brought me to tears, a song that says, and Zimbabwe must be saved, and Zimbabwe must be saved, if you believe and I believe. Then Zimbabwe must, and tears rolled down my cheek, and I thought, my gosh, this is incredible. What is going on here?
I mean, you're giving me goosebumps here. It's just, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now, at that point, you're a man of God, right? So you must believe in some way, shape, or form that He is taking control of your destiny.
100%. 100%.
Do you think that He is taking control of Zimbabwe's destiny?
You know, when I left the courthouse and they released me and I walked out a free man, I was shocked to see the numbers of people that had gathered outside the courthouse. Nobody, we hadn't put out an advert. My team didn't say, hey, let's go to the courthouse. Ivan is there.
This doesn't happen in Zimbabwe. It does happen in South Africa, but you know, if we don't know this already, to anybody who's never been to who's never been to a Zimbabwean court, it operates in a very different way. People don't gather outside public buildings.
You don't do stuff like that, because first and foremost, there is a law against public gatherings that have not been given approval. And these people just defied it. Something in them, I don't know what happened, but something triggered in the hearts of many people at the same time to say, you know what? I am making a personal decision to say enough is enough. I'm going to cross a line. And I'm told there was at least 5,000 people that came. Every one of those people went and defied the law and gathered and stood for hours on end. I got to the quarters about 10 in the morning until 7, 8 p.m. when I was released. People were there. They had candles. It means people went and bought candles somewhere and they gathered. God is definitely a part of this. And for me, that's the only explanation I have. I am not a political voice. I don't have a political party.
You don't belong
party.
To a party. You don't.
None of the above. I am not funded or financed by anybody or anything. We don't have a formal organization. We don't have a structure. Nothing.
Because already there are people saying that you are financed by the West, that there are influences from Britain or from America or from outside of Zimbabwe who are the ones that are behind you, as if you don't have agency, which is deeply insulting and tells you something about how certain African leaders feel about themselves.
Exactly, and about their people. But the thing with Zimbabweans is that I think Zimbabweans are not stupid people. No. We've heard this for years. And I know people have always looked at Zimbabweans and they've said, yeah, but what's wrong with you people, you know? You guys should just rise up and just ransack the whole thing and just... It's not that easy. Trust me, it's not that easy. If you have gone for years afraid to speak, you've gone for years and you've watched people beaten up. Someone goes into a jail cell looking normal and they come out swollen, beaten. People have disappeared. And people have all sorts of stories. You see videos of police brutality. I'm not making it up. So you cannot accuse me of making it up. It's there. The evidence is there. People are afraid. In Zimbabwe, we police each other. If you start talking about politics, Gareth, your own brother, your own friend comes up to you and says, Gareth, I think you need to be very careful about what you're saying, my friend. Okay? And so God is involved, and I think this is the confusing aspect of what's going on in Zimbabwe for a lot of people. There is a time for every person and for every people for the tide to turn. The Bible says weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. The night can only last for so long, Gareth, in Zimbabwe. It can only last for so long, and we have history to prove it. First of all, in our own country, in South Africa as well, and across the world. You cannot hold it down forever. At some point, and somebody sent me a message the one day, and they said, you know, let me tell you something. Even the most scared of little creatures, if you back it into a corner enough, that thing at some point is going to jump out at you.
When it can't feed its children, when it feels unsafe, when it feels like there's no other option.
Exactly. And that's why I say we don't need somebody from the outside to come and tell me that, you know, hey, why don't you go and complain? Here's some money, go and complain that you can't feed your children and that you don't have any money. No.
You're the one feeling it.
We live this life every day.
Well, we've got a show called Zim Conversations that we launched just a short while ago, which is really a place where Zimbabweans from all over the world, the diaspora of Zimbabweans, can come together. And it's hosted by two guys who I met the other day, K.F. Malindi and Kamo Piri. Mm-hmm. And these guys were saying when I interviewed them just a short while ago that for Zimbabweans outside of Zimbabwe, it's not in their interest to go back to Zimbabwe and fight the system either, because they would have to give up everything they've worked so hard to achieve outside of Zim and mm-hmm. and give up the means by which they can send money home to their relatives in Zim. Mm-hmm. So it's almost as if we're sitting with a system now that unless something dramatic happens, there isn't a way for the Zimbabweans who are outside of the country to help, and there isn't a way for the people inside to help themselves.
And you know, I must salute Zimbabwean citizens outside Zimbabwe, because these people have made sacrifices, and sometimes people, you know, look at Zimbabweans in the diaspora and say, well, you know, you ran away, you know, or well, you know, you don't know what it's like on the ground. And I think it's true that, yeah, they don't know what it's like on the ground, but they made a sacrifice to leave their family in Zimbabwe and go and work so that they can support that family. The diaspora supports Zimbabwe at close. I think the last figures were just over $1 billion a year in terms of the kind of money that comes into Zimbabwe from just Zimbabweans outside Zimbabwe. These people love their families. They love Zimbabwe. Mm-hmm. And for me, to make that sacrifice to be away from your family thousands of miles away so that you can support them. And it's because it's not only to create a better life for themselves, which by the way, it's their right to be able to choose that, but they have supported Zimbabwe for years. And I salute them for being able to remain patriotic, even though they're so far away. It's one of the things that in terms of the Zimbabwe that personally, I want to see a Zimbabwe that welcomes back every Zimbabwean that is outside Zimbabwe. To say, with everything you have learned, with every experience you have had outside, come and build your country. Come and give back to this wonderful land that so desperately needs to find an honorable place amongst the nations of the world.
You know, I've been to Harare a couple of times in the last few years. And the first time I went, I was shocked at how bad things had got. This was probably about 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So things were... there was trouble.
Mm.
There was a lot of dissatisfaction. There was a lot of collapse. You could see things were not working. And then when I went back a few times after that, I started to get a real sense that things were improving.
Mm-hmm.
That things had started to free up, that people were starting to participate in the economy, that people were starting to express themselves, that there was a kind of enlightenment happening.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, somewhere around a year and a half ago, again, things took a turn for the worse. Do you think that Zimbabwe at this point is the kind of place that someone like you can safely walk around and express yourself in? Or are you going to go back fearing for your life?
It's a tough place, Gareth. I have to be truthful and honest about this. It's a tough place to be able to walk around and freely express yourself, even within your constitutional, rights. For example, yesterday, the ruling party had a march in the city, you know, and I was reliably informed by people on the ground that the thousands of young people that marched were out baying for Ivan Mawarire's blood, and that they were saying he's sponsored by the West and we want to deal with him and we want, and so already you can see the intimidation tactics. You can already see the, wanting to put fear into people through that kind of thing. And it's, we go through these cycles in Zimbabwe where as soon as we come out of elections, sometimes there seems to be that lull in people's fear, but it's there. And then when we start to get towards elections again, it starts to rise up again. So we're on a journey now. This is what I love about what's happening. Part of what's happened in the last at least 2-3 months is that a process has now begun that includes more and more citizens that would normally be on the sidelines. And now they're coming in and each of them is saying, no, I cannot justify my silence anymore. What am I going to tell my children 20 years from now? How do I explain what happened? And I've said to people, even if we didn't succeed in terms of being able to air our views and have our government bring the kind of changes that we want to change, or even if we didn't succeed at the ballot box in changing, the governance, because that's the constitutional right that we have, we can walk away with the fact that when injustice was in the land, when corruption was in the land, we stood up, we said something, we stood for what we believed and did not hide.
How does your wife feel about all of this?
You know, she, my wife Samantha is a huge inspiration. She's a bit different from me because I'm a happy-go-lucky person. My wife is very matter of fact, you know. And when we had the discussion about the way things were going, I remember she said to me, I apologized to her and I said, sweetheart, I'm sorry that I've brought this upon our family. It's not something I had intended. It's only been, all I did was express something and I thought it would end there, but it's gone on and on. And she said to me, you know, I've known you a long while. And the one thing I've always known is that when you have a conviction about something, you give it your best and you give it your all. And my job has been always to make sure that I support you to be the best person that you can be in terms of living out your purpose. And she said to me, all I ask is that you make sure that you are safe. Me and the kids will be fine, you know. And I saying in an interview recently that I did.
Brave woman.
Yes, absolutely. I then said to her, sweetheart, I'm going to make a decision too, that I'm going to keep you out of the loop of many things that we will plan to do with this flag. Many of the things that I will, you know, the strategies and so forth, even my whereabouts sometimes, I will purposefully leave you out of that. So that if you ever have to be asked, if ever you have to be interrogated for it, you are genuinely in the dark about it. And so that's been our arrangement, and it still stands today. But I appreciate that woman more than anything, any other relationship that I have.
I hope that you are safe. I hope that the kinds of free speech ideals, the kinds of free expression ideals, the kind of patriotism that you seem to espouse is allowed. Not just in Zimbabwe, but here. And I also hope that South Africans can do our bit to help our neighbors. We have so many Zimbabweans who are part of our lives every day, whether it's people that we deal with in business, whether it's important people in the South African economy, people who have jobs here, people who have their families here, people who are perhaps refugees who have nothing. There are all kinds of Zimbabweans in every level of South African society. And I think to imagine that this is not partly our problem is also a very, very stupid way to go about things. How can we get involved? How can we help? And I'm not asking you to mobilize us, because that's not your role and that's not what I think you want to do.
Yeah.
But is there something that a South African who cares enough about this can do?
You know, as I've walked around, I remember on a couple of days ago, you celebrated Nelson Mandela Day. And I took that day to walk around Johannesburg and find groups of Zimbabweans and just talk. And I'm talking about people on the street, people that work in restaurants, the young men that wait around, hardwares, who are artisans and, you know, and so forth. And one of the things that happened is that a young man who is a South African walked up to me and he said to me, I want you to know that as South Africans, we watch what happens in Zimbabwe and we want to be able to have a voice that rises up and supports you and lets you know that even if our government never openly supported you, we want you to know that the citizens of South Africa identify with your struggle, you know, as people. And I think the one thing that I would ask South Africans to do is when you meet a Zimbabwean here in South Africa, before you castigate them or before you tell them to go back home, love them, hear their story, encourage them. Because not all of us are criminals. Not all of us are thieves. Even those that sometimes may be thieves, here you will be surprised what you find behind what someone does. And just encourage them. And if you are somebody who knows how to pray, pray with them and just pray for their country. Pray. It means a lot when someone who is... CliffCentral.com. Wish you the best, and I wish you well, and I wish things would turn around. And that's my prayer for South. And it's not just for South Africans. We are Africans. We are. This is the one thing that we must learn to do, you know, as part of our Ubuntu. You know, I am because you are, and you are because I am. If things break down at my house, Gareth, guess what's going to happen? They're probably going to start breaking down at your house pretty soon.
Shakespeare said that some people are born great. Some achieve greatness and others have greatness thrust upon them. It sounds to me like you're one of the latter mentioned. You've had greatness thrust upon you. I hope that these words end up being prophetic in that they have a positive outcome. But you're like a modern day Che Guevara or Simon Bolivar for Zimbabwe. I wish you only the best of luck.
I'm truly humbled and thank you so, so much for putting a spotlight on Zimbabwe.
Thank you. Pastor Evan Mawarire, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for telling us your story. All the best of luck to you.
God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you. CliffCentral.com.